This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us for Family Policy Matters. We are pleased to have Nancy Piercy back with us on the program this week. Nancy is professor and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University. A former agnostic, she's been described as America's preeminent evangelical Protestant female intellectual. Nancy is with us to continue a discussion that we began last week about her new book, Finding Truth: Five Principles for Unmasking Atheism, Secularism, and Other God Substitutes. In part one of our show, Nancy talked about the first of five principles she outlines in her book. She discussed why so many young people today are leaving the Christian faith and why it is so important for Christians to be able to defend the faith against secular worldviews. We're going to be picking back up with that discussion this week, and we hope you enjoy Family Policy Matters. Explain what you mean by critical thinking for Christians actually saves faith and how important it is for young Christians to develop critical thinking skills.
Well, critical thinking is what helps Christians to keep their faith. G.K. Chesterton once said, "Yeah, sure, ideas are dangerous, but they're actually more dangerous to the person who's never studied them, because then he will have no mental filter." Chesterton used the image of a teetotaler. He said, if you've never drunk any wine before, then a new idea will fly to his head like wine to the head of a teetotaler. He's more likely to become intoxicated. So Finding Truth is designed to help people avoid being intoxicated. I was talking to a mother not long ago who said she'd made a mistake. When she raised her kids, she raised them with the rule, you don't need to read anything but the Bible. We don't need to expose ourselves studying secular worldviews. Her son went off to college, joined a new atheist group, and abandoned his Christian background. She thought that by not exposing her son to secular ideas, she was protecting him. Instead, she had left him defenseless. So we need to understand, as our culture becomes increasingly secularized, young people need to be forewarned and forearmed with the kind of ideas they're going to encounter when they leave home, so that they can be prepared to answer, as 1 Peter says, to give an answer to anyone who asks of them.
Well, that is so important to understand. Now, Nancy, in Finding Truth, the third principle is test the idol, which you describe as asking a question. Basically, does this worldview contradict what we know about the world? Can you give us an example of how to use this principle on a particular worldview?
Sure. Romans 1, Finding Truth starts with the Romans 1, and Paul's address there was to a congregation who had not heard him speak. In fact, some of them may not even have been Christians. And so he was spelling out a Christian worldview in a very methodical way. So where does he start? He starts by saying, everyone has evidence for God from the created order. Now, when we read that, we usually think of nature, right? The beauty and creation, the beauty and complexity of nature. But it also means human beings, ourselves. We give evidence for God. And let me give you an example. So let's take materialism. We talked a minute ago about how materialism is it's the dominant worldview in our academic world today. Materialists say there's nothing that's real except matter, and that means human beings are just complex biochemical machines. They're essentially robots. Well, is that true? Of course not. No materialist can live that way himself. One philosopher jokes, if people deny free will, then when ordering at a restaurant, they should say, just bring me whatever the laws of nature have determined that I will get. So even secular people today will admit that their worldview doesn't fit the real world. And that's what I mean about testing. Because human beings are part of the evidence for God, every non-Christian worldview can be tested on its view of the human person, and they will always fall short. Because they don't see people made in God's image, they will always have a lower view of the human person, and it will never fit reality.
Well, Nancy, there's a great chapter in your book called Freeloading Atheists, and in it you discuss how every competing worldview or religion actually borrows basic principles from Christianity. What has atheism, for example, borrowed from Christianity, as you discuss in your book?
It's fascinating that many atheists have to smuggle in elements of Christianity. Think of it this way. There's an unprecedented number of movements in our day for equality and rights and human dignity and a host of ideals that atheists want to hold on to, too. But their own worldview doesn't give them a basis for that. The materialist worldview that's dominant in our world today sees people as complex biochemical machines. We have no freedom and no dignity. So what is the basis for human rights? There's a well-known philosopher who died recently, actually. His name was Richard Rorty. And he was sometimes dubbed the philosopher of democracy. But in Finding Truth, I give a quote where he says, "I don't have a basis for democracy in my own worldview." He says, I'm an atheist, I'm a materialist, I'm a Darwinist. But I realize that in Darwinism, the strong win out and the weak fall behind. So that can't be the source of universal human rights. So Richard Rorty says, where does it come from? It comes from Christianity. The very notion of equal rights comes from Christianity. And he says, I'm happy to reach over and borrow that from Christianity. And he's actually the one who used the word freeloading. He said, I'm a freeloading atheist because I have to get my concept of human rights from Christianity. My own worldview doesn't give it to me. Christianity has such a high view, such an appealing view of the human person, that even secular people keep reaching over and borrowing from it.
You argue that learning to think critically about the Christian faith and even testing it against other beliefs is a very healthy part of developing a stronger faith. How should parents respond when their son or daughter starts questioning the faith or asking questions about conflicting worldviews?
Well, it's very important to take questions seriously. A problem is that we have so redefined Christianity in emotional terms that we no longer do the hard work that it takes to research and find answers. In other words, the typical church-based youth group today, the strategy tends to be, can I engineer events that will ratchet up their emotional commitment? Can I get them emotionally engaged? And the assumption is that emotional engagement will rule out their questions. Well, the studies show that that's not happening, that emotional engagement does not get rid of genuine intellectual questions. And we need to respect young people as made in God's image with a call to love God with all their minds, as well as their heart, soul, and strength. We often overlook the mind part of that. So we're called to dress young people's minds and answer their questions. The studies show the main reason young people are leaving the faith is they're not getting answers to their questions. I was just rereading that survey because I had people challenge me on it. Young people were given the opportunity to say, does it have something to do with your relationship with your parents or relationships in the church? The number who said yes was very, 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 very low. Compared to that, the number who said I had intellectual doubts, I had skepticism or questions about aspects of Christianity that were not getting answers, those were the main reasons that young people themselves gave. So in Finding Truth, I give parents a strategy that they can use for answering any question from the perspective of any worldview, religious or secular. And so instead of having to master every single worldview out there, which could take a lifetime, Finding Truth gives you a strategy based on Scripture that you can apply to any worldview that you're child may be wondering about.
Well, Nancy, I want to close with principle 5 in the book, which is make the case for Christianity. How do you suggest that we can best make the case that Christianity is not only true, but that it's attractive to a world with so many competing ideologies that are increasingly hostile toward the Christian faith?
Yes, I think that the value of Finding Truth is it shows you how to make the case for Christianity at the very points where secular worldviews fail. If we want to be relevant, we need to be answering the questions that people are actually asking. And it's amazing today how many non-Christians are saying, I realize my worldview doesn't work. Let me give you a few examples. One way that worldviews fail is that they have internal contradictions, right? They have logical contradictions. They're self-defeating. A few quick examples. a worldview that's very, very common on our college campuses today still, is Marxism. Marx says, you don't believe what you believe because you're rationally persuaded it's true, but because it advances your economic interests. Well, if that's true, what about your own theory? To be consistent, Marx has to apply that to his theory as well. Did he come up with it just to advance his own economic interests? In which case, why should the rest of us pay any attention to it? It shoots itself in the foot. It slits its own throat. Or Sigmund Freud, incredible influence on the modern mind. He says, you don't believe what you believe because it's true, but because of your psychological history, especially sexual repression. Okay, what about applying that theory to Marx's own views, to Freud's own views? Did he come up with it because of his psychological history? In which case, you know, it discredits itself. Or postmodernism, we have trouble figuring out how to respond to postmodernism. But the core of it is just the claim that human rationality is swamped by non-rational social forces like race, class, and gender. What about their own theory? Are they essentially just mouthpieces for race, their own race, class, and gender? You see, in every case, they are a non-Christian worldview discredits human reason by saying it's really swamped by some kind of non-rational forces. Well, then how do they make their own case? They can only make it using reason. So essentially, what they do is they reach over and borrow from Christianity. Christianity has a high view of reason because it says we're made in the image of God. And so our mind reflects the divine mind. So every non-Christian worldview, even to make its own claims, has to borrow from Christianity. So they're all freeloading atheists, whether it's the question of human rights, which we talked about earlier, whether it's the question of just basically, can we even trust reason? Can we make a case for any worldview? They have to borrow from Christianity. So this is where Christians should really make their case, at the very points where secular worldviews fail. That way, we're making a case at the points that are particularly relevant to secular people in our day.
Well, Nancy, unfortunately, we are out of time for this week, but I really appreciate your time and your great insights. Where can our listeners go to learn more about and also to order a copy of your excellent new book, Finding Truth?
Well, I do have a new website. It's called nancypiercy.com. Very simple, nancypiercy.com. My husband is publisher and editor of The Piercy Report, P-E-A-R-C-E-Y, The Piercy Report. You can order it there. And then, of course, you can order it through Amazon.com, ChristianBooks.com, and any of the normal brick-and-mortar Christian bookstores as well.
Well, Nancy, thank you so much for spending time with us today to discuss your new book and also for just the investment of time, energy, and wisdom that you poured into that book. I think it's going to be extremely helpful for our listeners and for Christians around the world to really understand how they can put their faith into action, how they can defend the faith, be more solidified in their faith, and help their children, their friends, and others understand faith better. And in this growing, what seems to be a culture of just growing conflict and conflicting worldviews, it will give us a great deal of comfort to know that we can stand firm in our faith because we do know it's the truth, but we just simply need to know how to verbalize that, how to communicate that with others. So I know that this book is going to be a tremendously valuable resource for many. Nancy Piercy, thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for sharing insights from your new book, Finding Truth. And I do want to encourage our listeners to make sure that they get a copy and read that valuable text.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate being here.
You've been listening to the second part of our discussion with Christian apologist Nancy Piercy about her new book, Finding Truth. We hope you've enjoyed this interview, and we invite you to visit our website at ncfamily.org. Again, that's ncfamily.org to learn more about the North Carolina Family Policy Council and to listen to additional episodes of our excellent weekly radio program, Family Policy Matters.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.